That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party, Pledge to America, says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up. And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Corporation, nation of billionaire elites who can rule your whole world today with Republicans' grace and the media space. We're rubbing our bottom line into your face, singing, we will own you.
Republic Corp.
We will own you. Buying all your votes with the green notes. Corporate interests gonna own the whole world someday. With this money in your face, we'll buy your race and spread our agenda all over the place. Singing, we will own you.
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing. They're spending as much money as they can to influence you that, you know what? Pat Toomey's the guy. Tom Corbett's the guy. Here he is. Every ad that I've seen, from these folks, negative stuff. I've never seen anything telling me why I should vote for Tom Corbett. I've never seen anything of why I should vote for Pat Toomey. All I see is big money going into telling me why Joe Liberal, Sestak, that's liberal. That's all I keep hearing. And I don't think the Admiral's anywhere near a liberal. I just don't see it. Story out of the Washington Post. Outside front groups are spending nearly $2 million in Pennsylvania on anti-energy reform television ads. So you got these special interest groups who are just spending $2 million on these misleading, these fictitious television ads, telling us how wonderful their energy programs are. Advancing their anti-clean energy agenda. Look, what amazes me is we've got the Tea Party people saying, well, you know, the global warming doesn't exist. We should just continue to use as much oil as we possibly can because we're Americans, damn it, and we should drive our big SUVs and do whatever we want because we're Americans. We're exceptional. And you look at the fact that these big energy companies, the big multinational oil corporations, foreign oil corporations, have given money to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and said, you know what? Go ahead. Go attack the Democrats. Make sure our guys get in. You look at the Club for Growth. Spent over $1.4 million in the last month alone on ads just for Toomey. The Koch brothers, another one. Big money being spent in this state. According to the analysis, big polluters and their special interest allies have spent almost $70 million on anti-energy reform television ads since the beginning of this year. Almost $70 million. And you stop and you look at all of this money that's being spent to tell us how we should be voting. How these corporations who are now people and have the First Amendment right to say whatever they want are spending another number I've seen, almost over $300 million on third-party expenditures. What could we have done with all that money? I mean, stop and think of all the money that's being wasted. Think of how much health care we could get for people. Think of how much infrastructure we could build. We talked about the other day that ExxonMobil's quarterly profits rose by 55%. We could do something with a portion of that, couldn't we? You look at the money that Karl Rove and his ilk are spending. Millions and millions of dollars. All into hate, fear, and smear. All into convincing us that, oh, the benevolent corporation is your friend. You should love the benevolent corporation. It's scary stuff. And you got the International Chamber of Commerce, who spent upwards of $75 million on attack ads against Democrats. And what have they done? They've paid for television pundits. They've got people on their payroll. They've got think tanks. They've got blogs. They've got all of the infrastructure that they need to influence the debate. You know, a minute ago, Bill Scheer said something that caught my attention. He said that he actually went after politicians who had said some of the crazy stuff for conservatives to be quoted, instead of just going to the Internet and finding crazy people. You go to these right-wing think tanks. They make up stuff just so they can go back and quote it. I'm always amazed. I get this letter, and for the life of me, his name's not coming to me, but he has his own little think tank. He writes his own little papers, and then he cites himself as his source for all the information that he needs to write his next paper. So it's like I can make a bunch of stuff up to fit the needs that I need for this paper here. So you're plagiarizing from yourself. And you could never be wrong because you're your source. And I got to tell you, it's scary stuff what we've gotten into, because we have an electorate that, you know, what little they do read, they don't consider the source. And it could all be just a pile of cards. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. Gonna take a quick break right here. We're right back after this with your calls. We're gonna get back on time.
You could always speak your mind. You work so hard to say what's right. I watch you do it all the time.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
The great state of Georgia is famous for its peanuts. But I still say that my state of Texas produces the most extraordinary goobers of them all. As proof, I submit Joe Driver, a Republican state representative from the Dallas area. You can't get any more gooberish than Joe. Until recently, most Texans had never heard of Driver, even though he's been in the ledge for nearly two decades and is a powerful member of the Appropriations Committee, which doles out Texas tax dollars. His oversight of state spending is relevant to his gooberness because he recently burst into public consciousness over a rather basic error in a cane, not to mention a gross case of financial ethicalitis. It seems that Joe, who regularly rails against big spending liberals and demands stringent cutbacks in our miserly state budget, has for years been routinely billing taxpayers for more than $100,000 in travel expenses that his political fund had already covered, including airline tickets, fancy meals, and luxury out-of-state hotels. He would pay for these costs with campaign funds, then submit the same expenses to the state and merrily slip the taxpayer reimbursement into his own pocket. Now comes the amazing part. This double-dipping goober insists that he didn't know it was wrong to collect payment from two entities for the same expense. Apparently, Driver's mom never taught him the play-fair lesson as a boy. When confronted by an AP reporter about his curious bookkeeping, Joe claimed that the State Ethics Commission had okayed it years ago, though he couldn't say who or when. He added that he is apoplectic that his double-billing scheme turns out to be stupid, unethical, and illegal. It pretty well screws my week, he sighed. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Georgia, just try to match Joe Driver for pure gubernance. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current. Even a dead fish can go with the flow. Now available wherever books are.
Not right wing, just right. The Rick Smith Show.
Everybody, everybody, let's get into it. Get stoned, get it started, get it started, get it started. Let's get it started. Let's get it started.
Our quote of the day comes from E.J. Dion, Jr., Washington Post columnist from the 25th. Imagine an election in a third world nation where a small number of millionaires and billionaires spent massive sums to push the outcome to their preferred direction. Wouldn't many people hear condescendingly tut-tut over such a country's poorly developed sense of democracy and the inadequacy of its political system? That, of course, is what is going on in our country as you read this. What's going on is we're going to have a small number of people come out to vote and decide the direction of this country for the next 2 years. And you look at the money that's being spent on this election on all sides of the equation, and it's obscene. It's absolutely obscene. I got Dave here on the line to disagree with me about some money issues. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you this evening?
I'm good.
Yes, I was calling because, you know, sure they're spending a lot of money, but every year, every voting session, each party spends a lot of money. And I believe that Democrats are getting mad because they're not getting the money put in from their normal contributors, and it's all going to the Republicans this session around because everybody's just kind of tired. And I think, if somebody wants to buy an SUV and drive an SUV, hey, that's more power to them. I myself don't because I don't like spending the money on it.
Well, here's the thing. That's an interesting look at it. But right now, since the Citizens United case, the hands are off. The gloves are off. Corporations are going to then run this country if that's your take on it. If we're going to say, okay, corporations, go spend as much as you want, don't be surprised when we wake up one day and this is the United Corporation of America.
Well, it has been for years. I believe it. Politicians get put in by money men, just like the president, for years. He who has the money has been putting these people in office for the longest time.
So we can agree on that, because money is a big problem.
Oh, money's a huge problem. I think what they all need to do is come in. If they would drop the percent of everything in the United States of buying and producing 10% and drop it down all the way across the board, things might ease up just a little bit. But it's all about money, and that's the reason they spend money to get in there, because they know they're going to make tenfold back.
If they drop everything 10%, what's that?
Well, I just sit here, I have a lot of time thinking, you know, the price of producing anything or getting anything out of the ground or making roads or wages, groceries, pay, if everything just got dropped down 10%, like
it would be the exact same thing, only with smaller numbers, Dave.
Well, yes, but it'd make a lot of people happier because there's not very many people out there to kind of figure that out. You know, instead of paying 79 cents for a loaf of bread, you're paying 69 cents, and it looks a little bit easier, don't it?
Yeah, but if you're only making $6 an hour, what does it matter? You still don't have enough.
But everybody would be doing, you know what I mean? It's everybody would be doing that. A lot of people, honest, if you think about it, there's so many people out there, they wouldn't realize. I mean, it really wouldn't dawn on them.
I hope you're not saying the American people are stupid.
No, sir. No, that's what I called about, because I was flipping through the stations, and I heard you talking, and I got interested and started listening, and I just heard a lot of whining about the money being spent by the Republicans to get elected. It was like, well, now, hang on. If that's all they can come up with, you know, maybe they better come up with.
If you think I'm whining, the people that they're talking about putting into power are the same people who got us kind of into this mess in the first place, if you'd look at it. They're talking about more tax cuts for the very wealthy. They're talking about less regulation. And neither of those things have worked in the past.
Well, hold it. But the Democrats, if you know, have been in charge of the House for how many, for lots of years now. I mean, so you can't push it out on the Republicans and going back to who has made this country the way it is.
No, it's a whole ideology. I'm not talking about party. I'm talking about ideology. I'm talking about, and Bill Clinton is, in my, do you think Bill Clinton's a liberal? Would you associate the tag liberal with Bill Clinton like the right does? Because I don't see it. I see him ideologically on the side of business. So when you start looking at things in the, who's on the side of the corporation and who's on the side of the working people, I think most Democrats are corporatists along with all of the Republicans.
Well, I think 80% of the whole vote in there are with corporations.
So
I don't think you can be in there if you're not. I don't think you can be in there if you're not.
Well, and that, what's wrong with us? We, the people who are supposed to be controlling our government, what's wrong with us that we keep voting for people who don't have our interest in mind and are out there spending millions of dollars to convince us that the other guy is the worst thing since sliced bread and everything but an American?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, look at the guy who stole all the money from the people from the Teachers Association in Chicago and ran a bank with his parents that got popped for doing crooked things, and he's running to be governor. You know, and they're going to elect him. It's just crazy. I think they just need to get rid of the whole kit and caboodle and start anew. Let people we don't even know.
Well, I see what
we need
is publicly funded elections. What we need are small contributions going to candidates who the people know, and no corporate money. Go back to the way, if you want to be a strict constitutionalist, go back to where it was before corporations could give anything to politicians. Nothing.
Sure, sure. Oh, I'd go along with that 100%.
There we go. We can agree on something, Dave.
Oh, you betcha.
I appreciate the call, buddy.
Have a good day.
Thanks so much. And look, you know, at the end of this, it comes down to some very simple things. It comes down to the fact that, look, money has perverted our system. And if you look at when money's even, and that's kind of what you want in the election. You want both parties to have close to the same amount so that they have the same resources. Because I want to see how a guy's going to handle himself. How is he going to spend his money? How is he going to run his campaign? Because that's the first look you're going to get at someone who's going to be in office. I look at Pat Toomey in this state. The numbers I've seen put him somewhere around $15 million, almost double what his opponent got. Yet he's only up by a couple of percentages. He may actually lose because he's that extreme. Wall Street wants this guy in there because they want complete control. They want to go back to the days of, well, I shouldn't even say go back to the days, because the financial regulations that we put on weren't even that great. Again, another starting position. I say go back to Glass-Steagall, which Pat Toomey was a guy who helped do away with. He was someone who supported Graham Leach Bliley, which took all the restrictions off. Said, told banks and investment houses, go ahead. Go right on ahead. You can be a gambling casino. Go ahead. Take those mortgages. Bundle them up. Sell them off as AAA securities and let somebody else worry about it. So by doing that, look what we've done to our economy. So the same people who are telling us now that they want to come back into power are the people who gave us this wonderful gift called a recession. Because they don't believe in overreach. They think corporations are going to police themselves. They think that corporations are going to act in their best interest, which corporations' best interest is society. Wrong. The corporate best interest is profit. The bottom line, short-term, quarterly profit. That's how they gauge their CEO compensation. In fact, that's what the CEO's job is. Maximize shareholder wealth. Make sure that the investor class is fed, happy, comfortable. If you can cut your workers' pay, if you can do away with their health benefits, you can cut their pensions, give them those defined contribution plans instead of defined benefit plans, so much better. Because it's more profit. It's more profit to feed to the investor class. And we in this country had better come around to the idea that there is a class war going on. It is the very, very, very wealthy against the rest of us. And later on in the program, I'm going to go through some of the numbers that David K. Johnson came up with from the latest governmental numbers. That's just mind-blowing stuff. And again, shows you the very real the very real numbers and what this country is turning into. So I'm telling you, you know, we can disagree about a lot of things. At the end of it, I think we do agree that it is the money. We got to take that out of there. And we've got to get our elected officials back on our side. To me, it's that simple. And, you know, I got a kick out of, well, you're whining about the Republicans. No, not whining. Pointing out very, very real facts that the Chamber of Commerce is spending money from around the globe to pointedly get Republicans elected. That American Crossroads, Karl Rove's group, is spending tens of millions of dollars, somewhere around $70 million, to get Republicans elected. And we don't know who these groups are. We don't know who's putting the money in. There's no disclosure. And to me, I want to know. Because I go back to what my grandfather always said. If a rich guy's going to pull a buck out of his pocket to convince you you don't need something, you better find two to get it. Because if he's telling you you don't need it, you better believe you do. Because he didn't get rich by taking money out of his pocket for no reason at all, where there's no payback. He's not going to spend money just because, oh, he's a nice guy. Not going to happen. We're going to take a quick break. Right back with your calls. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425.
For and by we the working people. The Rick Smith Show. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. NYU grad students who work as teaching and research assistants are getting a National Labor Relations Board hearing on their workplace rights. Hundreds of these grad student workers had a union contract in place when their collective bargaining rights were taken from them by a Bush administration NLRB decision. Emma Creechy is a member of the Graduate Student Organizing Committee, UAW Local 2110 at NYU.
Like any other worker, we want a union so we can bargain collectively about issues of wages and benefits and workplace issues and to achieve some degree of security and stability in the workplace. So what we're asking is not any different than any other workers who have the right to bargain collectively would be asking.
If this NLRB hearing restores NYU teaching and research assistant bargaining rights, there would be a new union representation election. Creechy says the majority of the roughly 1,800 grad student workers at NYU support the union. NYU, however, is refusing to recognize and bargain with them.
They've repeatedly denied our right to unionize. They've attempted to union bust in many different ways on many different occasions. They could volunteer to recognize us, but they haven't. The thing to keep in mind is that this has implications for private universities across the country. And so NYU, I imagine, sees itself as holding the line for private universities all over the United States. So it has broader implications than just our struggle here.
The Canadian Auto Workers Union is drawing a line in the sand regarding concessions. Jesse Russell reports.
During rallies throughout the Canadian province of Ontario on Wednesday, autoworkers said enough is enough to automakers, demanding concessions while they see substantial profits. At a rally in Windsor, a local president demanded that suppliers stop trying to force workers to accept a two-tier wage system, slash pensions, and reduce wages. The union is also calling on auto assembly plants to stop pushing costs down onto the auto part companies. The CAW is currently in negotiations with auto parts companies throughout the province. The union stance is that the workers offered up enough concessions during the recession, and now that things are turning around, it is time for the companies to stop making what they see as unreasonable demands. Last Saturday, workers voted in favor of strike action at Canadian Engineering, one of the companies currently in negotiations with the union. The company has set a November 4th deadline to reach a contract agreement.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and from ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Uncovering the con in conservatism. Rick Smith.
Really like that that Tea Party song, Brett. Speaking of the Tea Party, Phoenix CBS 5 in Phoenix, Arizona, came out with a report that the Tea Party group out there has the website jointheteaparty.us. They've taken in somewhere near $500,000 in donations this year, spending half of it on marketing and, you know, paying salaries to themselves, and nothing. Nothing going to anything related to the Tea Party. Basically just a nice website that collects money and puts it in the pocket. That's kind of interesting. But again, you know, not surprising. Let's go to the phone. We got Jerry on line one. How are we doing tonight, Jerry?
Good.
What can I do for you?
Hey, you were talking there about the money, about how the Republicans and the Democrats, you know, be equal if they, you know, had the same amount of money. If you go back a few years, I guess it's a party thing. If you go back a few years when, I can't remember who was in presidency, but, we had a surplus of money, and then it seemed like as soon as the bigwigs got in there with the oil companies and everything else, everything just seemed to die off.
Well, what we were talking about, campaign funds. What you're talking about is when Bill Clinton left office, we had a massive budget surplus. They were projecting budget surpluses as far as the eye could see. In fact, Alan Greenspan, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, was worried about us paying off our debt too quickly because he didn't know what the country would do being debt free. George Bush came in, said, you know what, we're going to give the millionaires and billionaires big tax handouts, big holidays for their bottom lines, and he gave that surplus away. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, and I don't, you know, I think this is just my opinion, and everybody's entitled to opinion, and you can get into a heated argument about it, doesn't matter who you talk to, but I think Obama's doing a good job in there.
I think he is too.
And, you know, just if they would just let him do half the stuff that he wants to do, I think this country could be turned around in 4 years. And I think it's on an upswing now. I mean, looking at where we were before to now, I think we're in a lot better shape than what we were in.
I absolutely agree with you. If you remember when the president took office, we were in a free fall. We were losing hundreds of thousands of jobs every month. Even before his economic policies took place, we lost the vast majority of jobs. As soon as he put his plan into place, which again I think was too small, we began to stabilize the economy, and now we're starting to grow slowly. Kind of what you want to do. You don't want to have huge highs and valleys. You want to grow slowly. You want to pull yourself out in a smart, controlled way.
Right, right. And, I mean, I'm no politician, and I'm just a blue-collar worker. But, you know, when you start giving tax cuts to these millionaires and billionaires every time there's a tax cut, well, something's going to give, and it showed there before Obama got in. It just hurt everybody, and I don't see how people don't realize that.
Well, you know, it's all about what you see on your TV. It's all about what the wealthy want you to know, and they're spending big dollars pushing this anti-democratic message, because they realize that the country's angry. And I'm hoping, are you going to vote on Tuesday?
I probably will.
No, don't probably will. Please, you got to get to the polls, and you got to get everybody you know to the polls, because, you know, apathy is what is going to cost us big time, because what the Republicans are talking about doing is going back to what got us into this mess, Jerry. They're talking about tax breaks for the very wealthy again. More handouts for people who don't need it. More handouts for people who sit on their yachts and collect their dividends checks. And to be honest, these are the people who got us in this mess.
Oh, yeah. I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, every time you turn around, you see, and you don't see the Democrats doing it as much as what the Republicans do. I mean, every time you turn around, they're bad-mouthing the Democrats. Well, if they would just stop and look and see what the Democrats have done, I mean, they must be having their head in a hole somewhere or something because they can't see what's going on.
Well, I mean, they're angry, and they've been given a straw man. The right-wing for-profit media in this country has decided that big business is paying the bills, so it's time to attack Democrats. It's time to attack progress. And really, honestly, and truthfully, the big industries are not happy. The insurance industry, not at all happy, because you've got this healthcare reform bill that it's going to take a couple years to implement, but it's going to happen. Wall Street's not happy because we got a financial reform bill that's going to rein in some of their power. At some point, you've got to start saying, this is good for us. It's good to have some regulation, some sane, rational oversight. It's just that simple, Jerry.
Yeah, all right. And I mean, I go to work every night, and you hear these people talking about this health reform and how bad it's going to be for us. Well, you know, they just get, you know, I'm not up on what the reform bill is, but, you know, I think what they're hearing is the negative stuff, but all policies are going to have a negative side to it. I mean, not all policies are going to be a good policy the whole way through. I mean, there's going to be bad in it somewhere.
Yeah, well,
I mean, that's just the nature of everything. I mean, where you have good, you're going to have bad. So, I mean, you're going to please one person, and you're going to probably make two other people mad, but that's all part of the way everything works.
Well, you know what's happened in this country, Jerry, from the beginning of time? The very wealthy have known how to slice and dice us, how to divide us, how to keep us separate. Your blue collar, your white collar, your white, your black, your male, your female, your union, your non-union. They've always figured out how to keep us apart. What has to happen is you and I have to come together. We have to organize and build a sane, rational political movement of people who will stand up for their rights and say, you know what? We want the very wealthy to pay a fair share. We want a country that's going to have health care for every man, woman, and child from cradle to grave, because that's the only way you bring costs down. We need that kind of a movement. We need that kind of organization. And we need
right.
you to get out there and vote and to tell all your friends to go vote.
Right. And what I liked about I got a 19-year-old son that's going to graduate this year and go to college, hopefully, and I just got a letter in the mail from my insurance for my new job that I just started, saying that he can be put on my insurance.
Yep.
Till 26, and I thought, you know, that's wonderful.
That's even if he doesn't go to college.
Right, and that's wonderful because the way this country is now, for a young kid going out and getting a job, you know, it's hard for him. And you know, when you got kids and look into the future, it's grim. I mean, it's coming around, like I said, but, you know, it's going to take a while. And I don't know why people don't see that.
Yeah, well, it didn't take us 18 months to get into this mess. It took us almost 30 years. It's
right.
not going to take us, hopefully it doesn't take us 30 years to get out, but we didn't get into this mess overnight. We're not getting out of it overnight. It's going to take a lot of work.
Right.
Jerry, I got to move along. I appreciate the call. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And, you know, look, at the end of this, that's the message. We're not going to get out of this overnight. It took 30 years of supply-side voodoo Reaganomics and then whole neoliberal agenda to put us into this mess. They took a tax code that went from, 91% during the Eisenhower years on the top marginal bracket. Those people making over $1.6 million a year back in 1952 paid 91% on that dollar over $1.6 million. You know what the top marginal rate today is? It's 35%. Now, I'm not advocating going back to 91%. Don't think it's ever going to happen. But a sane, rational tax code, maybe the one Reagan had, of 50%, seems rational to me. So that when someone makes $4 billion in 1 year, as we had a guy this year do, or last year do, $4 billion, society gets some of that. And he pays for the roads and bridges and helps helps build the infrastructure of this country. I don't know if you've noticed, and I'm sure our truck driver friend who called earlier has noticed that the roads and bridges in this country are not up to snuff. I'm sure he's going to tell you that the roads here in Pennsylvania are some of the worst in the country. Why? Because we have uneven tax plans. We have uneven tax rates. And what's going on is the tax has been shifted from the people who have the money down to the rest of us who are struggling to get by. That's why you got to get out and vote. That's why it's so important. Tuesday, November 2nd, you got to get to the polls. You got to tell everybody you know to get to the polls. If you're registered, you've got to vote. I don't care where you're at on this. It will disgust me. It will absolutely infuriate me if 11% of the people in this state dictate who the next governor is. I mean, if you look in Delaware, where the woman who's not bright enough to touch herself won an election, 5% of the voters in that state put her on the ballot. 5%. Out of a state of 691,000 registered voters, 30,000 people put her on the ballot. Think about that. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
Come to talk.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party Pledge to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up and returning veterans. Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Hello, I'm David Fillman, Executive Director of AFSCME, Council 13, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. A union of over 1.4 million strong and growing, AFSCME is gaining improvements in the workplace all across America. And right here in the Commonwealth, more than 95,000 AFSCME members make Pennsylvania happen. Highways, libraries, hospitals, parks, offices, prisons, classrooms, museums, courtrooms. You'll find AFSCME members at work in all these places and many more.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
I make Pennsylvania happen every day.
Today's AFSCME members take on public service jobs as diverse as they are, not for the recognition, but for a better Pennsylvania. For more information, please visit our website at AFSCME13.org. Labor is changing, so is your labor union. We are AFSCME.
We make Pennsylvania happen!
Time for change.
time to rearrange.
Keeping the chambers of commerce within their gated communities. The Rick Smith Show.
You can't tell me we're gonna make it somehow. I heard a wise man say revolution starts now.
Our quote for this hour comes from an old insane guy, but still an interesting quote. Benito Mussolini said, fascism should rightly be called corporatism, as it is a merge of state and corporate power. And if you go back and you read about fascism, that's really what it was about. The trains ran on time. Everything was, you used the power of the state to enforce corporate power. And more, what I fear is that's what we're heading back toward. The Tea Party people that I've met, they want to destroy government. Everybody I've talked to says, do away with government. They're no good. And I say, okay, well, then who takes their position? Then what comes of that? And all I get are platitudes, freedom and liberty. Okay, well, what comes then? Because somebody is going to make the decisions. Somebody is going to make the decisions for your life. You know, the really big ones. You'll decide whether you're going to wear white socks or black socks or if the underwear you're going to wear are going to be clean or not. You're going to make those decisions. But the really big things, you don't have any choice in, like whether you breathe clean air or whether the food you eat is contaminated with steroids or who knows what. The really big things, you don't really have a lot of control over. And that's why you have a government of equal power or hopefully a little bit greater power than the corporate special interests so that you can keep them in check. I'm not anti-corporation. I'm anti-unfettered corporation. I'm anti-laissez-faire capitalism. I'm a capitalist. Yes, I am. But I do believe you have to have equality and power. You cannot have monopolies. You cannot have a billionaire class that can dictate policy. Which brings me to this story from the AP that the private prison industry helped to draft the Arizona immigration law. The AP writes, State Senate Senator Russell Pierce, Republican of Mesa, speaking at a news conference about efforts by state legislators to propose legislation to deny U.S. citizenship to children of immigrants. When it comes to creating demand for a previously unnecessary service and making a profit by any means necessary, you can't beat the private sector, no matter what it is. So no one should be surprised that the private prison industry has been part of Arizona's immigration law. Corporations and interests like RJR Reynolds, ExxonMobil, the NRA, and Corrections Corporations of America host a regular conference for state legislators in D.C. And last December, the Corrections Corporation of America and Arizona State Senator Russell Pierce drafted a bill that eventually became the law in Arizona. And what's interesting about it is the prison industry knew that if you criminalize it, you get the police arresting these people, there's big tax dollars to be made in holding these folks. Now, look, we can have the argument about immigration all day long. At the end of it, it's still the federal government's responsibility, which for years they have been abdicating. So starting back during the Reagan years when they gave amnesty, probably not a great idea back then, but here again, what do you do when you have a poverty nation on your border? I have some people who say you build a big fence. And I say, okay, how big are you going to build the fence? We'll build it 30 feet. And then there's going to be an industry of building 31-foot ladders. People who are desperate are going to come here. When you have a desperation class, they're going to come here. If you militarize it, you're going to have problems as well. So look, at the end of this, it's not Arizona's thing. But what I find interesting is that you have the prison industry who's going to make a big profit off of this. They really are. Baiting the legislation. And this has always been my argument against term limits. Because what ends up happening when you have term limits is you end up having more corporate lobbyist control. Because they know where the bathroom is. I mean, it takes you 2 years to figure out where the bathroom is just about in the federal government. So why would you want them out in four? By the time they figure out where things are, it's time to leave. And that gives the lobbyists power. That gives the special interest power. What we need to be doing is we need to limit that access. We need to close the swinging door between being the director of Homeland Security, like Tom Ridge was, and then he goes and works for a lobbyist firm to go back and lobby the exact people that he was overseeing. Seems a little weird to me. Or Billy Townsend, the guy from Louisiana who helped write the Medicare Part D bill with the "we'll pay any price you want" drug industry. We'll pay retail. We're not going to negotiate. And then as soon as that bill passes, he quits his job as a representative to go become Big Pharma's top lobbyist. That's the kind of stuff that has destroyed our government, and that's the kind of stuff we need to make illegal. And the other part of this is we need to know where the money's coming from. And the AP had another interesting story. The Supreme Court has refused to block a Minnesota law requiring disclosure for corporate political spending. The High Court, without comment, turned away a request for an injunction from Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life. The Supreme Court earlier this year freed businesses to spend unlimited amount of money. They could spend whatever they wanted, overturning 100 years of decided law. 100 years of campaign finance law. They, with one stroke of the pen, decided, you know what? Corporations are human beings. They are people. They have the same free speech rights. Therefore, they should have unlimited, unfettered access to the airwaves, spending as much as they want. And look what it's gotten us. Anyway, the High Court refused to take on this case. The people who brought it were Minnesota Concerned, Citizens Concerned for Life, the Taxpayer League of Minnesota, and a travel agent. Figure that out. Who sued, saying the reporting requirements amounted to a ban on free speech. Stop and think about this for a second. What the right loves to throw up. The right loves this. They love to say, well, those unions are spending a lot of money. Those unions are spending money all the time. They're spending big money, and we know it. Uh-huh. And you know where absolutely every penny goes. Because labor has, think about this for a second. Think about how perverse this is. Labor unions have the most stringent reporting requirements of any agency, any industry in this country. They have to report every dime on their LM2s. They have an entire department, the Department of Labor, that oversees what they are doing. The Department of Commerce doesn't oversee the International Chamber of Commerce. You don't have an entire government agency overseeing the International Chamber of Commerce. No, but you have an entire body that oversees organized labor. Because for some odd reason, politicians think it's a good thing to restrain workers' rights, to restrain the rights of the people while saying corporations, go ahead, go do what you got to do. We're going to let you go and do what you're going to do. Think about that for a minute. There's something wrong about that. And it sends a message to me that I find disturbing. That the Chamber of Commerce can spend as much as they want. And we're not going to have to worry about finding out where they're getting the money from. We had the president of the local Chamber of Commerce here on the program last week. And he took offense to me saying that the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is actually the International Chamber of Commerce. He said, well, there are only 115 chapters around the world. Only 115, you know, like in Russia and China and India and Bahrain and Dubai. And I said, well, what part of international doesn't that fit? You got 115 all over the globe. Seems international to me. And his rationale was, well, we've got more than that here in the state of Pennsylvania. What's that got to do with anything? You still got 115 chapters around the globe taking money from Russian oil companies, taking money from Saudi princes, taking money from the royal family of Dubai. taking money from Chinese corporations. And stop and think about how weird this is. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. When you think about that, when you think about the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, you think about a body, an organization that's going to fight to keep American jobs, going to fight to make this country the strongest, most economically powerful nation on the world. Wrong. What they're doing, all they want to do is make business easier wherever they go. So if they go to China, they're just greasing the palms, greasing the tubes for jobs to be shipped out of here. And you look at the last 30 years, the last 40 years, since we've been following these bizarre neoliberal trade policies of let's have the third world be our manufacturer. We'll do those high paying desk jobs where we push paper across the desk. And where we have industries like, hey, I'll cut your hair if you'll cut my grass. Or, hey, let me wash your car and you can do my laundry. Explain to me what kind of an economy that is. We are living the Reagan dream. This is it. If you go back and if you read anything about Reagan, he said he wanted a service-based economy. Well, you know what? Welcome to the Reagan fantasy. We are a service-based economy. We are no longer the manufacturing powerhouse of the world. And for my truck driver friends who are out on the road, there's a bridge in Trenton, and I know you've been over it, that says Trenton makes, the world takes. That isn't true anymore. We are not the manufacturer of the world. In fact, this year it's reported that we will probably lose the title that we've held for well over 100 years as the number one value-added manufacturer in the world. That, my friends, is not a good sign. We're going to take a quick break. If you want to email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. A couple of videos up there for you to look at, some commentary, some get-out-the-vote stuff. Great stuff at thericksmithshow.com. We're right back after this with Senator Dalen Leach. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
If you were injured at work, do you think you need an attorney? You probably don't. To protect yourself, you do need to know your rights. Retain control. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Order your free book, The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case, by visiting workinjuryinpa.com or calling 695-4722.
And now, back to a man who's never seen a $20,000 shower curtain, Rick Smith.
I'm too sexy for my shirt, too sexy for my shirt, so sexy it hurts. And I am too sexy for Milan, too sexy for Milan, New York and Japan.
And welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. I gotta tell you, I'm not quite sure where that came from. Other than maybe it's for my next guest, State Senator Dalen Leach. Dalen, welcome to the program.
It's good to be here, Rick. And frankly, every time I go on any show of any kind, they play that song. So I don't know what it is, but, you know, it just seems to happen.
I don't know either. But hey, good fun, good. some serious stuff, really, though. You know, I'm looking around. And what's scaring me right now is I think the lunatic fringe has taken over the opposition party. I think the Republicans have been taken over by some very radical elements.
Oh, I've never seen anything like this. There is literally nothing you can say that is so crazy as to disqualify you as a Republican in this election cycle. I mean, we have people not only, you know, calling for the elimination of Social Security and Medicare, but, you know, starting their campaign commercial by saying that they're not a witch. We have one guy who's dressing in that Nazi uniforms, who apparently
Mr. Boehner is going out to a fundraiser for this week. We have, I mean, you know, whether it's Sharon Angle or Christine O'Donnell or, you know, Buck from Colorado or all around the nation, we have just a series of candidates who literally seem to be mentally unbalanced. And I just wonder what this means for the future of our politics. Because, you know, I'm a Democrat and I support Democratic candidates typically. But when I grew up, the Republicans were people I didn't necessarily agree with, but they were like, you know, you had Dwight Eisenhower, you had, you know, Bob Dole, you had Gerald Ford, you had Bob Michaels. I mean, you know, these were more conservative than I am, but they were at least sort of like, you know, on this side of sane.
They were in the room, at least.
Yeah, exactly. We have people. I mean, Ronald Reagan would have no place in the Republican Party now. He would, if he was running for office now, he'd have a Tea Party challenger because he signed a tax increase and he signed a liberalized abortion law. Richard Nixon would be considered some crazed left-wing lunatic. And that shows you just how far this party has moved. And, you know, at a certain point, I think it's going to be very self-destructive to them. They may do well in the short term in an angry electorate, but I think once they actually have to start submitting solutions and governing, people are going to say, "My God, this is way, way beyond the pale."
Yeah, I mean, there's a comedy element here, though. I mean, you got that woman in Delaware who I doubt is smart enough to touch herself, but you know, she's a major distraction from the deadly serious radical right-wing fringe that wants to end minimum wage, destroy unemployment, privatize Social Security, basically repeal the entire 20th century. And undo everything that Republicans have really been against from the beginning.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, these are not incrementalists. These are not people who want to scale back things or think we've gone too far. As someone like Ronald Reagan said, these are people who want to completely eliminate the entire basis of our society these days. And imagine what the life would be like if they succeeded and we did eliminate Medicare and we did eliminate Social Security and we did eliminate the minimum wage and we did eliminate child labor laws. We would have grinding third world style poverty. People literally begging on the streets, like as if you go through Calcutta or something like that. You know, every civilized country in the world that can afford it has a safety net of some sort. These people want to eliminate the safety net entirely. Not only that, environmental regulations. I mean, Sharon Angle says we should eliminate the Department of Environmental Regulations, the EPA. There should be no one whose job it is to make sure that people aren't dumping toxic waste into our streams and into our air. In fact, it shouldn't be illegal to do that. You know, this is crazy stuff. Let's eliminate public schools. We've heard Republican candidates talk about that. If you want an education, go buy one, which of course means that a large percentage of the American people just wouldn't be educated. What kind of country would we have if they really got what they wanted?
Well, we'd have the 19th century again.
Yeah, we would have, yeah, I mean, I think we'd have to go further back than that. And keep in mind, the 19th century was a very different type of economy, a very different type of world than we have now. So the thing is that if they ever got, whenever Republicans get to implement even their less radical policies, less radical than this, you know, there's a real recoiling, as we saw with the Contract for America, as we saw with President Bush. You know, people are like, you know, they actually like having some government services. They actually like having a society that's organized and where there's, you know, some protections for them when they drink some water or when, you know, when they're arrested, there's some civil liberties protections or whatever it is. So, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Interesting and scary to see how this plays out.
Well, what's really scary to me is what I've been saying here on the program is I think it's like group therapy. The angry people in the Republican Party, the people, the 5% on the radical fringe now feel that they're in control and they've gotten a little therapy. And like most people who go through some therapy, they feel they need to share. And what they feel they need to share is all this hate that's been pent up inside of them. You see an Illinois senatorial candidate saying, "Oh, I believe black men prefer dealing drugs than getting an education."
Yeah, I just Facebooked about that yesterday. But you don't have to look far to see just really crazy statements coming out. And crazy people. I mean, Tom Tancredo could be the next governor of Colorado. We all remember Tom Tancredo.
Yep.
You know, and the rabid homophobia that we see in the Republican Party now. where we have Republican candidates comparing gay people to criminals and calling for reinstatement of anti-sodomy laws and, you know, incarcerating gay people. And, I mean, it's just, it's really something not only out of 19th century America, out of a more, even more repressive societies that we could talk about. And,
but hey, get government off my back.
Well, when someone tells you they want when a right-wing person tells you they want government off your back, what they mean is, I don't want to pay taxes to help poor people. Okay, they have no problem with the government telling you who to pray to, when to procreate, who to sleep with, what books to read, what movies to see, a whole host of things government should be very specifically involved in. They just don't want them involved in making them help people who are not like them.
And that's an excellent point. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Dalen Leach, State Senator from the 17th Senatorial District. Dalen, I'm looking at this election cycle, and I've got some optimism, hoping things go right on Tuesday if we can get the vote out. But I heard something Tom Corbett said recently about we need to hold the vote down, need to keep the vote down. I'm wondering how he's going to do that.
Well, it was interesting. You know, there was a Hispanic, a right-wing Hispanic group recently that ran a TV commercial urging Hispanic voters not to vote.
Latinos for reform.
Yes. The tagline of the commercial was, don't vote. I mean, it wasn't a very subtle message.
But here's the thing. The guy who put out that ad, he voted.
Yeah. Oh, of course he voted. He doesn't want people who vote the other way to vote, is what he's really trying to say. And that's why it's targeted towards certain radio stations and certain TV stations. Look, you're absolutely right. There was a poll yesterday that came out. Honorado is up 2 points among registered voters. Among likely voters, he's down 7. So simple math tells you that the more people vote, the better chance he has. And there's going to be significant efforts to get out the vote. You know, whether they'll work or not is an open question, because people have to, you know, I've been involved in get out the vote efforts in the past, and, you know, it's easier some years than others. Some years it's very difficult to get certain groups of people out to vote who become complacent. And one of the things I would say, you know, one of the biggest problems I have, Rick, is that there's a lot of progressives who are sort of wishy-washy or indifferent about voting this year. And to me, that's just crazy. Because Obama has not created some sort of utopian society in 2 years, that there, you know, there's an article in the Rolling Stone with Keith Richards on the cover about the Obama presidency and this Congress and how historic it is and how many truly historic achievements have been made, whether it was the stimulus bill, which changed a whole variety of areas of law, whether it was health care, whether it was financial reform, whether it was credit card reform, whether it was student loan reform, whether it was an increase in the cafe mileage standards that cars have to get, and all kinds of environmental improvements that have occurred. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And to say, well, yeah, all that good stuff happened, but it's not perfect yet. It's not everything I wanted. So therefore, I am bailing on all of this. It's just the height of self-destructiveness. I mean, we know what the Republicans are going to do. There's no subtlety there. We are the problem this year, because Sharon Engel is only close to Nevada because the turnout models in Nevada have about 25% of our base not showing up at the polls.
Yeah, we've seen the enemy, and the enemy seems to be us.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing stuff. And again, I go back to this. You know, he says we need to hold it below 50%, and I ask how the Attorney General plans on suppressing the vote. I mean, the Republicans have been masters at voter suppression. I don't know if you saw the thing in Texas this week where they put out a flyer saying a vote for the straight Democratic ticket is a vote for a Republican. Don't be fooled. I'm going, this kind of shenanigans somehow has to be stopped.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's difficult. It's very difficult to stop things in a campaign because, you know, the First Amendment and there's and Republic figures. And beyond that, you know, what's the remedy? You know, it's very hard to craft a remedy that's effective. So, you know, we can't rely on sort of the legalisms of it. We have to sort of rely on just outworking them. That's the only way it's going to happen. So, hopefully that will happen. We see some signs. There are some promising signs in the early voting in some places. We'll hope. I mean, I remember 1998. It was Clinton's second term, usually a sixth year of a presidential term. Midterm election is a disaster for the party in power. And Clinton was approaching the impeachment, and everyone thought there'd be 45, 50 seats gained by the Republicans and 5 or 6 seats. And they wound up losing 2 Senate seats and only gaining about 5 House seats. Everything was wrong. The polls were wrong. Everything was wrong. Part of it was because there was some fatigue with all the impeachment stuff. But, that could happen this year, or it could be like 1994, which, again, the Republicans got far fewer votes in 1994 than they did in 92 when they lost. The problem is even more of us stayed home.
Right. Well, the fatigue for me are all these attack ads and all the money that's gone into just the most negative, hate-filled sputum that I've ever seen in a political.
And it's so pervasive. Tom Corbett, for example, who you mentioned, has been 100% negative for 3 weeks now. 100% negative. Every dime he spends is negative. And of course, for the listeners out there, negative campaign commercials, if you're learning some information new about a candidate a week before the election in a negative commercial, it's almost guaranteed not to be true or to be misleading. So, take it with a big grain of salt. But, again, I think we are part of the problem here. The only way this stops is if it stops working.
Yeah. Let me ask you a last question.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans in the Senate walked away from their October 1st commitment to pass a reasonable, rational severance tax. That hasn't happened. They've been gone now, 28 days?
Yeah.
Tom Corbett, let's say Corbett does win. There's no tax pledge. What does this mean for the taxpayers of Pennsylvania?
Well, that means that the energy companies will not be paying their fair share like they are in every other state. For taking our resources out of the ground and shipping them across our state lines to other places, billions of dollars, they'll just keep it in their profits. I mean, keep in mind, Sarah Palin instituted a severance tax. Governor Perry of Texas instituted a severance tax. These are not liberal people, okay? This is not an unusual, it's common sense. If someone else is coming from out of town to take your resources, you charge them something for it. They expect to pay a tax. They're laughing at us that they can't believe their good fortune that we can't pass anything. Every other state, they pay a tax. It's crazy that they don't have to contribute anything to the well-being of Pennsylvania or the cleanup of the damage they're going to do to the environment.
It just makes no sense to me that we can't get something rational passed, since it's already in their business plan, that we're already paying for it anyway.
Again, you're absolutely right. The reason we can't is because, again, the Republicans have, it's not an ideology against taxes, it's a theology, okay? And you know how persuadable people are in their theological beliefs. I mean, to them, it's just, it's taxes are bad. Doesn't matter what they're for, doesn't matter what they're on, doesn't matter what they pay for.
I got to tell you, if things go south on Tuesday and Democrats stay home, I'd hate to be you next budget fight.
The one good thing is we won't be late. We won't have a late budget. We'll probably pass in April. Because if Corbett and the Republicans control everything, there's nothing to disagree on. There's no negotiations. They'll just go in and say, let's cut all this stuff. And they'll say, great. And they'll pass it. And that's what it'll be. If that does happen, and I'm praying it doesn't, then, my role becomes a voice of the opposition. And a voice to explain to people what's happening, and that's what we're going to try to embrace.
All righty. We've got to get everybody out on Tuesday. And Dale and I'd love to have you back at some point
anytime.
In the near future. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Rick.
We're going to take a quick break. We're right back after this.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the match.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the match.
He did the monster match. From my love.
Teabagger angry, but safe. Rick Smith.
The vampire's peace. The ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrical
washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything?
anything, that's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
As soon as you're born, they make you feel small by giving you no time instead of it all. Till the pain is so big you feel nothing at all.
If it's class warfare, my class is winning, but they shouldn't be.
A working class hero is something to be.
The taxation system has tilted toward the rich and away from the middle class.
A working class hero is something to be.
Wait, that isn't the truth. Remember, check out the website at thericksmithshow.com. We've got some videos up there talking about the amazing statement by Republican Tea Party gubernatorial candidate Tom Corbett, who said we need to keep the Democrats down and we need to bring the Republicans up. We need to get all of our people out to vote. We need to somehow figure out how to suppress the other side, which, again, I think is kind of weird for the guy who is the state's top cop, the guy who's supposed to be enforcing the laws, to say. Kind of a weird thing to say. And I don't care if he'd have been a Democrat. I think it'd be a really bad thing to say. Remember, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails. What's interesting to me is most of our Tea Party friends, they think global warming's a hoax and want to consume and consume without any thought. And earlier, one of our callers said, you know, well, I'd like to have an SUV. And yeah, me too. And the problem is, and this is where my thinking process stops for the most part. At the end of the road, we are giving millions and millions of dollars, well, billions of dollars, to countries that hate us because we're consuming so much energy. We are consuming so much oil. And what's interesting is this new report just came out that says that, you know, Americans travel overwhelmingly travel in their cars. 90% of the time, whenever they go anywhere, they're in their car. And those cars are fueled almost entirely, 94%, by oil products. Depending on oil to run, our nation makes our nation vulnerable while we're handing out billions of dollars to people who hate us. And it's time for us to really stop and think, how do we become an energy-independent nation? How do we cut our dependence on the rest, on these countries that hate us? How do we, honestly and truthfully, how do we become independent? We spend $1 billion a day. We send $1 billion a day overseas. $1 billion. And for those who remember 1973, OPEC shut our country down with an embargo. Shut us down. We were importing 35% of our oil at the time, 1973. Today, we are importing more than double that. We haven't learned. And if you remember, under Jimmy Carter, we were moving towards energy independence. We were moving towards getting off the juice. Then we saw Ronald Reagan take office and bye-bye independence and hello, Master BP Exxon. And I think we're going to kind of see the same thing coming in this election. Because all of this hatred of alternative energy, all of this hatred of the new stuff, every one of these Republican candidates are saying, well, you know what? We need to go back, stick on the oil. Heck with that newfangled stuff. Kind of weird. Let's go to the phone lines. Got Mike on line one. How are we doing tonight, Mike?
Pretty good, Rick. Hey, talking about this thing about Americans driving. You can't be too hard on Americans because we were condemned to driving when they did away with rail transport in
the
country. And basically, after World War II, pretty much every other country on Earth had all of their infrastructure destroyed, their roads, their railways. So they started from scratch in 1946 and were able to build new stuff with new ideas. And we're still struggling along with rail beds and rail lines and things that were built in, you know, two centuries back.
I agree, but here's the thing. I remember as a kid, you still had trolley cars going through Cleveland. You still had the tracks that were there. You could have built that infrastructure, but what happened in this country are the oil interests, the automobile interests, they bought all that stuff up and shut it all down. Why? So, as you put it, we have to have the car. We're sequestered there. We don't have an alternative. What I'm saying right now, we should be looking to the future, saying, you know what? Let's start building that stuff. We need jobs. Here's a perfect opportunity.
Well, you know, I went to a symposium last night on the subject of getting rid of plutonium that is in nuclear weapons that are being dismantled.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they want to do that so that there's not nuclear proliferation or a risk of somebody getting it and using it as a weapon is to turn it into fuel for a reactor. And that's a great idea. And it's not hard to understand because reactors all really burn plutonium anyway a large part of the time. People don't know that, but they do. Problem being is that they've been studying how to do this and designing it and rethinking it for over 9 years. Okay?
Okay.
And they still have not built the first production line to do this. Manhattan Project went from we're not sure what plutonium is to an atomic bomb in 2.5 years in the 1940s. We have become a completely impotent country when it comes to doing anything.
But I don't know about that. What I would say is you got two people who are being extremely cautious because they don't believe the end is anywhere near. I would say the Manhattan Project, we saw a very real need, and it had to get something soon.
Well, I think we're going to get there. I think we're going to get there really soon, Rick. I think people are going to find out what some very ugly things look like. I was on another show the other day. There's a local radio personality here who was screaming and complaining about lost artifacts at the Pennsylvania Historical Museum Commission. And that just pressed a hot button in me because I know that they've had their budget cut in half. So I called in screaming that this is what you get. This is what you people want. This is what happens when you cut budget. People with institutional memory leave because you laid them off or forced them out, and they knew where stuff was.
Yep.
And now you don't know that. And you know what? I don't think they're going to tell you. I don't think they're going to be too willing or too happy to come in and say, well, I mean, yeah, I know where that is. That was in warehouse so-and-so down there, and it's in a box. I know where that's at. No, they're not going to do that. They're going to say, have fun.
Well, but here's the thing, Mike, and I know what you're talking about, and here's the thing. This is their world. This is that circle that they love. They underfund things. They cut funding to the thing, and when things go wrong, they say, look, it doesn't work. We should cut it out altogether. And it's this giant screw job that they've been giving us all these years where you've got people who don't believe in government, underfunded, and then when it goes awry, they say, see, look, we told you it didn't work.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that's what I told this guy. He's screaming, this is outrageous. Those commissioners should know where every piece is. And I go, they can't know. They're administrators. The people they laid off to make up for a 50% budget cut knew. Or could have told them what. And they also don't understand that these aren't just schmucks doing this. These are archivists, specialists in preserving antiquity.
They're educated people. And that's one of the things that has really gotten under my skin. You talk to the average citizen who's been told all these years, well, those state workers, they're just lazy. I mean, I've seen your resume, Mike. I got to tell you, I don't know many people who could do your job. And I'd hate to see you leave. But if you did leave the state, the state workforce, we'd rue the day.
And you're going to lose three of me in the next 2 or 3 years. The unit I work in is composed of 5 people, and 3 of us are all going to retire at once. One of those individuals, oddly enough, in a previous incarnation, was a nuclear submarine commander.
How are you going to replace that?
That's right. You're not. And if these people like this other radio guy who has not a clue. Well, he doesn't like it. I've been a guest on his show before in an official capacity for what I do for work. And he probably didn't remember that, but I did. But, you know, this ranting, well, we'll cut everything. This is what you're going to get. You're going to lose artifacts, and you're going to lose people that you're not going to replace in another 30 years because they don't exist anymore. Or you're going to spend more money than you have ever imagined getting them back. Because I can tell you, if I had worked for the Historical Museum Commission and they laid me off and I'd been out of work for 2 or 3 years, you wouldn't get me back for short of about $1 million. Now, you want to know where your artifacts are? Well, you're probably not going to get to find out unless you come up to cash. And oddly enough, that's what happened. Private industry is standing there waiting when these people walk out so that you can get them back through a consulting company.
Well, isn't that really the point? Isn't it the point to make everything that we as a society have done collectively something that someone can profit from?
Well, and that's really where they want to go. This same guy today, too, was ranting and raving about our soldiers and the fact that some states screwed up getting out the ballots for them. And he said, they should put down their guns and not fight. And I called him up. I said, can you believe that you just suborned treason and mutiny in our troops? I said, I'm not sure that you didn't commit a federal crime.
You know, never accuse them of being the brightest bulbs in the box, Mike. I got to take a break right here. I appreciate the call.
We'll see you, Rick.
Thank you so much. We're right back after this. 1-888-520-RICK. Or Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
The Rick Smith Show. Changing America for the better. The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.
You're listening to Win. Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. NYU grad students who work as teaching and research assistants are getting a National Labor Relations Board hearing on their workplace rights. Hundreds of these grad student workers had a union contract in place when their collective bargaining rights were taken from them by a Bush administration NLRB decision. Emma Creechy is a member of the Graduate Student Organizing Committee, UAW Local 2110 at NYU.
Like any other worker, we want a union so we can bargain collectively about issues of wages and benefits and workplace issues and to achieve some degree of security and stability in the workplace. So what we're asking is not any different than any other workers who have the right to bargain collectively would be asking.
If this NLRB hearing restores NYU teaching and research assistant bargaining rights, there would be a new union representation election. Creechy says a majority of the roughly 1,800 grad student workers at NYU support the union. NYU, however, is refusing to recognize and bargain with them.
They've repeatedly denied our right to unionize. They've attempted to union bust in many different ways on many different occasions. They could volunteer to recognize us, but they haven't. The thing to keep in mind is that this has implications for private universities across the country. And so NYU, I imagine, sees itself as holding the line for private universities all over the United States. So it has broader implications than just our struggle here.
The Canadian Auto Workers Union is drawing a line in the sand regarding concessions. Jesse Russell reports.
During rallies throughout the Canadian province of Ontario on Wednesday, autoworkers said enough is enough to automakers, demanding concessions while they see substantial profits. At a rally in Windsor, a local president demanded that suppliers stop trying to force workers to accept a two-tier wage system, slash pensions, and reduce wages. The union is also calling on auto assembly plants to stop pushing costs down onto the auto part companies. The CAW is currently in negotiations with auto parts companies throughout the province. The union stance is that the workers offered up enough concessions during the recession, and now that things are turning around, it is time for the companies to stop making what they see as unreasonable demands. Last Saturday, workers voted in favor of strike action at Canadian Engineering, one of the companies currently in negotiations with the union. The company has set a November 4th deadline to reach a contract agreement.
This newscast made possible in part through underwriting from the AFL-CIO and from ULICO, the Union Labor Life Insurance Company.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing sanity and rational thought back to America. Rick Smith.
Well, that's what they've been doing for the last 30 years. And all I get are my T-Twizzler friends going, oh, all Obama wants to do is redistrict Butte Whale. Yeah, exactly. As it's been since the beginning of time. The pendulum doth swing. And David K. Johnson has an excellent piece over at tax.com. It's called Scary New Wage Data. He writes, now for some really scary breaking news from the latest payroll tax data. Every 34th wage earner in America in 2008 went all of 2009 without earning a single dollar, according to new data from the Social Security Administration. Total wages, median wages, and average wages all declined except for the very top salaries, which grew by more than five times. Mr. Johnson points out that not a single news organization reported this data when it was released on October the 15th. And we talked a little bit about it, but not to the depth we're going to go into right here, thanks to Mr. Johnston's work. The new data holds important lessons for economic growth and tax policy, and take on added meaning when examined in the light of tax return data back to 1950. We've talked about this a bunch, the difference between the Eisenhower tax code. And look, I'm a big fan of returning to the good socialist President Dwight David Eisenhower, the good socialist Republican, if you will. He goes on to write, the story the numbers tell is one of a strengthening economic base with income growing fastest at the bottom until in 1980 we made an abrupt change in tax and economic policy. Since then, the base has fared poorly, while huge economic gains piled up at the very top, along with much lower tax burdens. And look, folks, we're in trouble here. If we have no money to invest in schools and infrastructure, if we can't educate the next nuclear scientists to do the work that the state workers are doing who are leaving, like we just talked to Mike about, if we can't build a high-speed rail, if we can't build the infrastructure that we need, we're going to have nothing of an environment for business to thrive. Look, if you want to be a business culture, you've got to have infrastructure for them to thrive in. I'm not anti-business, but you know, at some point you've got to think about, if you're a business owner, do you want to relocate to a place with potholes and with no public transportation and with clogged arteries, a clogged highway system? Of course not. Measured in 2009 dollars, total wages fell by $215 billion from the previous year. Compared with 2007, when our economy peaked, total wages were down $313 billion, or 5% in real terms. So that $313 billion out of the hands of the working people of this country. So we're earning less money. The question is, have our costs come down any? And the answer to that is no. The costs keep going up. Our wages keep going down, but our costs keep going up. He points out in 2009, there were only 150.9 million Americans who reported any wage increase income whatsoever. Only just about 151 million of the 310 million in the country reported wage income. That's below 2005, when there were over 151.6 million. So in that four-year span, we've got a lot less jobs, because of the number of people that have been born and have moved into the work, or into the workforce. And it's only slightly ahead of 2004 when we had 49.4 million people in the workforce. Now think about this for a second. Our population continues to grow. We continue to expand. We have more people looking for jobs, more people out of work. So when the Republicans say we need to roll back spending to, say, 2005 or 2007 or whatever number they're pulling out of their backside, we're talking about massive, deep, wide, painful cuts because the population growth has expanded. There are more people to have to take care of and to help. And they know that. But they say, oh, well, we're not cutting anything. We're just keeping things the way they are. Well, if you keep things stagnant, that's actually declining. Those are cuts. In 2009, the average wage slipped to $39,269 or down $243 compared with 2008. The median wage declined at the same ratio, down $159 to just over $26,000. Meaning half of all workers in this country made less than $505 a week. So if you look at the Clinton years, stop and look at 1992 to 2000, there were 21 million more people employed. The Bush years from 2000 to 2009, we just saw a very small increase of 2.8 million more people working. We haven't even come close to keeping up with population growth during that time. So we've lost jobs because of that. And then the Bush recession hit. And we lost millions of jobs. David K. Johnson goes back to using Medicare numbers because everyone pays the same flat tax. Millionaires, billionaires, they pay the same rate as minimum wage workers. As the woman handing you the cheeseburger through the window or the guy who's out there cutting your grass, they pay the same rate. In 2009, the year of the Great Recession, there were 74 people in this country that took more than $50 million a year. These are our captains of industry. And what was their average wage? The average wage for our captains of industry was $518.8 million in 2009, the year of recession. That is a massive jump, nearly six times what they took in 2008. The average taking in 2008 from the 50 million plus club was a mere $91 million apiece. Now think about that for a minute. In 1 year's time, they went from $91 million between the elite club, $91 million apiece on average, up to $518 million. So come on, teabaggers, sing with me. Redistribution of wealth. Come on, redistribution of wealth. You can say it. It's redistribution of wealth, right? These titans of industry are captains of capitalism. These fortunate 74 took as much as the lowest paid 19 million hardworking people in this country. 74 people on one hand, 19 million on the other. You're going to tell me that that's equitable? You're going to tell me that that's the kind of nation we want to have, that kind of an income disparity? Now, Johnson points out that back in 1994, when the top category of government reporting was $20 million a year instead of 50 like it is now, there were only 25 people that got into that class. And their average earning was $45 million in 2009 dollars, $45 million. Now think about this. See how this has gone? 1994, it was $45 million. During the Bush years, 2008, it was $91 million. Now as the jaws have gotten wider and the wealthier have gotten wealthier, it's $518 million. So where are my teabaggers talking about redistribution of wealth? Where is that? Where's the redistribution of wealth? And the other thing Johnson brought up, another interesting point in this article that I think needs to be looked at, is that everyone on the lunatic fringe seems to be screaming about the auto industry getting loans from the federal government. The jobs that were saved were not the kind of jobs that people think about when they think of the auto industry. We took workers who were making a reasonable living, and we slashed them down to just barely above minimum wage. I mean, most of the auto workers are making $14 an hour. Major restructuring. While management and Wall Street, they walked away unscathed. The investor class is back full force, and you see it every day. Bonuses are back. Compensation's back. It's the workers who are going through the struggle, and they're going to struggle for another generation. Because all of those advancements, all of that stuff, all of the steps forward that my grandfather said, you know, I was shoveling coal for 7 cents an hour, busting my behind 16 hours a day trying to make a living to support your grandmother and I. And it was the union who brought us out of that. It was the union who said, you know what, they need to be paid this amount. And they need some benefits, and they need to be taken care of. They need to be respected. And he knew in the 80s that it was all coming unraveled. He knew the wealthy had grown weary of a working class that could afford a decent meal. They had grown weary of a working class that could afford to live in a decent neighborhood. They had grown weary of a working class that demanded education for their children. They grew weary of having the working class in their highfalutin universities. And we love to talk about, oh, we're just this classless society. Oh, it's just wonderful. Because we can go sit in a restaurant with a rich guy. That's what we're told. When was the last time you sat across from Warren Buffett? When was the last time you and Bill Gates rubbed elbows? Now, I'm not talking about a guy who makes a reasonable living. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the other numbers in this report that are just eye-popping and mind-blowing. This is the Rick Smith Show. 1-888-520-RICK. 1-888-520-7425. Right back after this.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
If you or a loved one has suffered a workplace injury, don't jeopardize your benefits by not fully knowing your rights. Don't be misled by those whose job it is to minimize your injury, your disability, your lifetime medical coverage, and your financial recovery. Order your free book by Calhoun Associates by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 695-4722. Don't be taken advantage of. Get your copy of The Seven Deadly Sins That Can Destroy Your Pennsylvania Workers' Compensation Case by visiting workinjurynpa.com or calling 717-695-4722.
Get government off our backs. We're going to take our country back.
That sounds good, but is this the time for bumper sticker solutions? The Republican Tea Party Pledge to America says cut taxes for the rich and cut government. Some have even said close the government down. Then what? Food and mine inspection gone? Forget about Border Patrol or keeping terrorists locked up? And returning veterans? Give them a cheap voucher instead of a quality VA hospital. Let's dump in the rivers and pollute the air again. The teabagger chanting, keep your hands off my Medicare. Sorry, Medicare will be whacked hard. The same for Social Security. Schools, police, and fire departments will disintegrate. So Republican Tea Party folks, then what? We're all angry and frustrated. But when you vote, remember who got us into this mess in the first place.
Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees at AFGE.org.
Your proud defender of the working class majority. Rick Smith.
Thank you.
back to Rothschild. There's a name that goes back. And they're the people who are doing very well. These are the kind of folks who are doing very well in this economy. The Smiths and the Jones is not so well. A lot of people that I know struggling to make ends meet, struggling to pay the bills, and more we're hearing people talking about they're worried about being able to pay their mortgage or their rent. They're worried about basic necessities. And you've got a media culture, a structure in this country that strokes that fear, that keeps them on edge, saying, oh, well, you know, Obama's going to raise your taxes, even though he's cut taxes for 95% of the people in this country. But you never hear that because they don't want to admit it. You never hear that many of the things, as the caller said earlier, hey, I can keep my kid on my health care until he's 26 so he can go to college and get a job and not have to worry about if he slips and breaks something that it's gonna destroy his future. You never hear, hey, thanks, Mr. President. No, what you hear is, that's Obamacare. And all you hear is complaining and whining. And all you hear are people who, all you hear are folks who are going to attack you.
You lie. You hate America.
Yeah, that's what we hear from the right. That's all we hear. Anyway, I want to go back to this David K. Johnston piece. You can find it over at tax.com. It's called Scary New Wage Data. And he's talking about how we've gotten where we are. That's what's going on is the very, very top, the very top of the economic scale, they've seen all of the benefits. Right now, the top 74 wage takers are making $518 million a year. And that is just a meteoric rise. While wages for everybody else have stagnated, the very, very wealthy are doing very, very well. So what they figured out how to do is open your wallet vertically and extract what little you had left. And he points out that during the years from 1950 to 1980, the share of total income going to those at the top declined, while real incomes for the rest of us, the people who work every day, grew. So what we had is what Paul Krugman calls the Great Compression. The very wealthy were reined in, and that wealth that was at all sitting at the top was pushed down to the working class. So you had factory workers and truck drivers and industry people who could make a decent living. My grandfather, who was a truck driver, could raise three children and buy a house in a solid working class, middle class neighborhood. After starting out living in his car. Because when my grandmother and grandfather got married, they were living in their car in the early 20s. But through work, through their union, through dedication, they were able to buy a house in a solidly working-class, middle-class neighborhood there in the, just south of Cleveland. They raised three kids. And they lived the American dream. And all that was going up until 1980. And in those years, we had money. We had vision. We could do the big things that Mike talked about, like using the plutonium to fuel nuclear power plants. We spent the money that we were taking in. We invested it in education. We invested it in research and development of new technologies. We built roads and bridges and schools and you name it, we invested in it. We the people. Hospitals were community hospitals. They weren't private for-profit institutions. They were community hospitals. They were run and owned by the community. So there was a social benefit to them. And healthcare was run not for profit. Smart, if you ask me. Then what happened? Well, then we saw Reagan. And we turned into a society of, as David K. Johnston says, mine, here, and now. That's our society. Me, me, me. It's mine, here, now. It's all we hear from Washington. It's about today, never about tomorrow. We've got war going on with no sacrifice. We've never asked anyone to do anything to support the war effort. And if you truly believe in this war, in Iraq and Afghanistan, if you did, we would definitely have to pay for it, right? No. And what were we asked by the Bush administration? Go shopping. Go ahead. Just go shopping. We have savings with no interest. I got money in CDs. I'm getting nothing in interest. 0.75% for a three-month CD. And we're seeing government services cut, cut, cut. He goes on to say, in this era, the incomes of the vast majority have barely grown while the incomes at the top have soared, like I said. Reaganism has trimmed the base of the income ladder while placing a much heavier weight on the top. Narrowing the base while adding weight to the apex does not make a stable structure. Here are some numbers that may surprise those age 50 and under. That's my generation. He's taking these tax numbers from Emmanuel Says and Thomas Piketty, who have been really just wildly praised for their work. In 1950, the share of income for the bottom 90% was 64.4%. So of all of the big pie that is the wage income of the big pie, the bottom 90%, those of us who work for a living, and I would guarantee everybody listening to this show is in the bottom 90%. We took 64.4% in 1950, the year my mother was born. In 1980, we took 65.37%, a very modest increase, just under 1%. Fast forward to 2008, after Reaganomics, after the Bush slaughter, we now take home 51.7%, over 13.5% decrease. What we have is clear. 30 years of incremental progress for the bottom of us, those 90% of us that work for a living, during the Eisenhower years, the Kennedy years, the Johnson years, all the way up until Ronald Reagan. And then we have, starting with Reagan, 30 years of falling wages. And I'm asking my teabaggers, where are you? Let's talk about redistribution of wealth, because I'm right here with you. I'm angry about redistribution of wealth. I'm angry about the fact that they've stolen from the working class and given us credit cards and given us credit lines and said, go ahead, use your homes as an ATM so that you can continue to consume. Go ahead, use your home as an ATM. And now they're taking our homes away from us because you know what? We overextended. The top 10% in this country, they enjoyed nearly 40% increases in their share of the income pie. And here's where it's going to get interesting. The higher you go into the 95, 96, 97, 99.1 percentile, the more you get. The largest gains were seen by the top 1/100th of a percent. It's pretty nice, huh? It'd be nice if you were up there, wouldn't it? The people who are making $4 billion a year, like David Tepper. Johnson points out from 1950 to 1980, the average income grew tremendously for the bottom 90%. In 1950, using today's numbers, $2,009 dollars, 1950, you'd have made $17,719. By 1980, that was up to $30,900, an increase of $13,222, or about 75%. From 1980 to 2008, the numbers went in current dollars from $30,900 to just over $31,000, an increase of about $300, 1% increase. So stop and think about this for a second. During the years of the Great Compression, when we said we don't really want to have a billionaire class, we don't really want to have a moneyed elite, we don't want to have the House of Gentry, we saw a compression where the working people reaped from their productivity. They were able to support their families, buy homes, buy a car, take vacations, put their kids through college, have money for retirement, and you know what? Have children that weren't saddled with debt and saddled with the responsibility of caring for their parents. They saw a 70, almost a 75% increase in their wages during that compression. During the Reagan years, and up and through to the Bush years, we've seen a 1% increase. Had the income been distributed the way it had been from 1950 to 1980 over the next 28 years, from 80 to 2008, had that continued, the average income for the bottom 90% would have been 68% higher instead of just 1%. And what does that mean in real dollars? That means an additional $20,000 in your paychecks. And I ask the question, as does David K. Johnston, how different would this country be? How different would we be as a society if families weren't saddled with debt? How different would we be if you had an extra $400 a week in your paycheck? You had some savings. How much different would we be? How about the top? Let's turn our focus just for a second to the very top before we wrap this up. This is where the changes in income of these two areas become very, very interesting. What the figures show is that the closer to the top you get, the wider things get. Since 1980, the bottom 90% have seen their incomes go absolutely nowhere. But at the very top, the higher you go, the greater your gains. And as we have decreased number of jobs, as we have more pressure on people to sacrifice wages and benefits and conditions, where does that savings go? It continues to rise. And I've got friends who are right now faced at giving up more wage concessions, more pension concessions, just to keep their jobs. And we're seeing story after story because big business knows that right now they've got you by the short hairs. They've got you right where they want you. I'm curious, your thoughts. 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425, or you can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Remember, check out our website, therickSmithShow.com. Got a couple of videos up there for you to take a look at, one in particular to get you out to vote. We're going to take a quick break right here, right back after this.
Smart policy and sound investment matters. The Rick Smith Show.
The great state of Georgia is famous for its peanuts, but I still say that my state of Texas produces the most extraordinary goobers of them all. As proof, I submit Joe Driver, a Republican state representative from the Dallas area. You can't get any more gooberish than Joe. Until recently, most Texans had never heard of Driver, even though he's been in the ledge for nearly two decades and is a powerful member of the Appropriations Committee, which doles out Texas tax dollars. His oversight of state spending is relevant to his gooberness because he recently burst into public consciousness over a rather basic error in accounting, not to mention a gross case of financial ethicalitis. It seems that Joe, who regularly rails against big spending liberals and demands stringent cutbacks in our miserly state budget, has for years been routinely billing taxpayers for more than $100,000 in travel expenses that his political fund had already covered, including airline tickets, fancy meals, and luxury out-of-state hotels. He would pay for these costs with campaign funds, then submit the same expenses to the state, and merrily slip the taxpayer reimbursement into his own pocket. Now comes the amazing part. This double-dipping goober insists that he didn't know it was wrong to collect payment from two entities for the same expense. Apparently, Driver's mom never taught him the play-fair lesson as a boy. When confronted by an AP reporter about his curious bookkeeping, Joe claimed that the State Ethics Commission had okayed it years ago, though he couldn't say who or when. He added that he is apoplectic that his double-billing scheme turns out to be stupid, unethical, and illegal. It pretty well screws my week, he sighed. This is Jim Hightower saying, come on, Georgia, just try to match Joe Driver for pure gubernance. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow. Now available wherever books are sold.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I was gonna clean my room until I got high. I was gonna get up and find the broom, but then I got high. My room is still messed up, and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high.
Well, I know there are a lot of people out in California right now who are hoping that all you guys who do get high and forget to do things, don't forget to go vote on Tuesday, because there's a big bill, there's a big vote out there coming up with the legalization of marijuana. So maybe put it down for a day, maybe just once, and maybe this is a guy who may have considered putting it down to kind of lighten things up. There's a guy in Nebraska who, well, he thought his girlfriend was cheating on him. So like any rambunctious 22-year-old who has a history of beating up his girlfriend, he decided to tie her down with belts and hair ties and put a wet rag over her face and waterboard her. And what I find interesting is that they're going to charge him. And they're holding him on a $150,000 bond, but they're charging him with domestic assault and a couple other really, really pretty serious charges. And I think an interesting defense would be, if our government can do it, why can't I? And I wonder if she told the truth. I wonder if she came for it. If I were her, I would have said, now that he's arrested and in jail, I wasn't, but I soon will be. While you're sitting in jail, and maybe even send you a picture or two. Another interesting story comes out of Rockdale County, Georgia. And this is one of those things that just really just kind of makes you go, you know, I feel for this guy in the worst way. Because, you know, he's going to be pretty much out on his backside. I don't know if that's a good way of putting that. Anyway, the pastor of the Rockdale County megachurch has publicly announced that he's gay. And, well, I don't care. I find it interesting that his church, to this point, has not booted him out. But if you look at the history of pastors in these megachurches who come forward and announce their positions, they tend to be ostracized. And, you know, I always think of Pastor Ted Hatton.
If you send me $1,000, I won't tell your wife.
Yeah, good old Pastor Ted. Yucking it up.
I think I know what you did last night.
Yeah, well, I know. Well, evidently we know what you did last night. Sniffing crack off the backside of a male hooker. But, you know, hey, you know, if that's your thing, God bless you. You do what you got to do. But I feel sorry for this guy because he came out and said, look, you know, we've had a bunch of teenagers who have been bullied and have taken their lives because of how they're feeling and who they are. And this guy said that, you know, it's about time that he stopped living the lie. I mean, look, the guy was married for 25 years, had a couple of kids, 21 years. And amazingly, and this is what kind of struck me as I read the story, the wife knew all along. In fact, she said, you know, I thought I could change him. And it just turns out that it just wasn't going to happen. So interesting stories. You know, and again, this whole thing, it's not my issue to be, you know, I'll be honest with you. It's not something that I spend a lot of time talking about. But I find it interesting that the conservative movement has come out against it. See, I always thought the conservatives were about no government intrusion. Leave people alone. I always thought the government, the anti-government conservative people were personal liberty, freedom, you know, that kind of stuff. And that's where I sit. I guess that's my libertarian streak coming out in me, saying, you know what? If they're two consenting adults and they're in the confines of their four walls, God bless them. Just like I would say to anybody else. If a heterosexual couple were in the confines of their four walls, consenting adults, whatever it is you want to do, none of my business. That's none of the government's business. And that's really what we're talking about. Is it the government's business? This whole gay marriage thing is just nonsensical to me. Absolutely ridiculous on so many levels. And it's not like we don't have a million other problems to deal with, that we've got to worry about what consenting adults do within their home. And if they want a commitment to each other, so much better. We know that committed people are more stable. And to some of my really far-out conservative friends, I always love to jab them with, well, if you want them to stop having sex, if you want them to stop, you know, engaging in homosexual activities, marriage is the perfect thing for them. Because as any married couple will tell you, after a couple of years, you know, I'm sure you've been there. So there you go. That's my thought of the day on that issue, and I'm sure we're sure better off because of it, aren't we? Maybe not. Anyway, I don't know if you saw the president was on The Daily Show, and he made a quote that has gotten a lot of attention. He said most of the jobs that we lost were lost before the economic policies we put into place had any effect. Well, one of the fact-checking organizations came out and said, look, you know what? He's absolutely right. That's how it happened. His quote, he says, we lost 4 million jobs before I was sworn in, 750,000 the month I was sworn in, 600 the month after that, 600 the month after that. So most of the jobs that we lost were lost before his policies took effect. And while everybody's sparring over this debate over who to blame for the unemployment, the reality is most of those jobs were gone. And if you go back and you really look at what happened from September until March, we lost a massive amount of jobs. And in the 19 months from February 2009 to September 2010, we've had overall job decline in the private and public sectors of about 2.6 million jobs. So the losses haven't been as great. We've stabilized it. We've stopped it from completely free-falling. And that's what the recovery bill was about. Now, personally, as I've said before, I really wish that it was more heavily weighted towards investment, more heavily weighted towards building, towards, public transportation. I come down into Harrisburg every day. I'd love to have a train that goes from where I live in Carlisle out here to Harrisburg. Would love to have that corridor one put through. And for the years that I've been living in this area, I've been asking for it. But you know what? We've got county commissioners. Oh, gee, it's too much money. Well, maybe nobody will ride it. Yeah, and well, maybe everybody will ride it. You know, how many people like sitting on 81? Because half the time when I drive down here during the day, you know, I drove truck for years. And most of the time I spent driving at night. So there's not as much traffic. I'm now driving in the daytime world, and I hate it. It's too congested. There are too many people. And you get one idiot who makes a mistake, and everybody's tied up for an hour. One little minor hiccup, and you've got backups as far as the eye can see. Now, look, you know, when I was driving a truck, that happened too. But I always worked at night, so you didn't have as many problems. I mean, every day there's something. And this area is not a mega, mega metropolitan area. This isn't New York City. This isn't Boston. This isn't L.A. You shouldn't have hour delays. But we do because we have leaders in this area with no vision. And this area is exploding with development. This area is exploding with people moving in, and we have no vision. There's no plan on how to deal with people moving about. And when it's finally here, and we look around and go, we're gridlocked, we're landlocked, we can't go anywhere, then we're going to have to come and make a decision. And I would say, why don't we just do it now? Anticipate. Oh, I don't know, have a little vision. Maybe have some people who get elected to office who say, I'm going to take a leadership role. And I'm going to prepare for the future, because we do know this is going to be a growing area. We know that. So let's put some infrastructure in. How about a light rail? That would be nice. And we can tie that into other rail spurs so that maybe you can get from this area to Washington, D.C. Boy, wouldn't that be something? Maybe you can get down to Philly in a more efficient way other than taking the one Amtrak line. Bring the cost down a little bit so more people would do it. Sounds like common sense to me. Maybe too much common sense. Maybe too much. Let's take a quick break right here. We're right back to wrap this up. Remember, check out TheRickSmithShow.com. You can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Old washer or dryer on the fritz, and you don't have the bucks for a new one?
Call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
You say that old refrigerator isn't refrigerating so well.
Call Mike at Klein's, 243-3211.
How about a bunch of money to replace your old stove or microwave?
Again, save the cost of a new one. Just call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Here at the radio station, we call Mike our resident mechanical and electronics genius. Have you ever met someone who can literally fix anything? That's Mike.
Call him at 243-3211.
You'd be amazed to learn how well many of the older appliances were made. A simple repair might give you another 5, 10, or even 20 years of service from that old washer, dryer, stove, or refrigerator at a fraction of the cost of a new one. Mike repairs TVs and electronics, too.
So call Mike at Klein's Appliance Repair Service, 243-3211.
Let Mike fix it right, and you pocket the savings.
That's 243-3211 for Mike at Klein's Appliances Repair Service.
The Chamber of Commerce attacks Joe Sestak for supporting good union jobs in Pennsylvania. Unbelievable.
The Chamber of Commerce gets millions of dollars from foreign corporations.
They oppose Social Security, Medicare, and overtime pay.
The Chamber of Commerce is against pension and retirement security.
And they support tax breaks for corporations that send our jobs overseas.
Joe Sestak supports our unions and our jobs because he is a true American patriot.
Thanks, Joe Sestak, for fighting for Pennsylvania jobs.
Who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters? Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons. Lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Well, you know, I don't think it's going to matter. I don't think it's going to matter who we're talking about. There's an interesting article in Politico today. He writes, next step after Citizens United, corporate candidates. William Klein and Eric Hansel write, people, they can really get in the way of democracy. When the Supreme Court ruled in the Citizens United decision that corporations had the same rights as individuals to contribute to federal candidates, the millstone of human influence began to be lifted from U.S. politics. For campaign contributions, the court said, life can begin equally at birth or with articles of incorporation. In other words, corporations are people. And if that's the case, they write, why limit the free speech rights to corporate persons to stop at campaign contributions? Why shouldn't corporations be allowed to vote, for instance? Why shouldn't corporations be allowed to run for office? And that's why the Murray Hill people have run their commercial.
It's a new day. Till now, corporations influence politics with high-paid lobbyists and backroom deals. However, as much as corporate interests gain from politicians, we could never be absolutely sure they would do our bidding. But today, thanks to an enlightened Supreme Court, corporations now have all the rights the Founding Fathers meant for us. It's our democracy. We bought it, we paid for it, and we're going to keep it. That's why Murray Hill Incorporated is taking democracy's next step, running for Congress. The way we see it, corporate America has been the driving force behind Congress for years, but now it's time we got behind the wheel ourselves. Murray Hill Incorporated will bring enlightened self-interest and corporate accounting to government to put business first. It is a vision for the future we can all be proud of. Now that democracy is truly for sale, Murray Hill Incorporated is offering top dollar. Vote Murray Hill Incorporated for Congress for the best democracy money can buy.
I'm Eric Henson, designated human for Murray Hill Incorporated. We approve this message.
And the website is murrayhillweb.com. And while facetiously posted, the question then becomes, where does it stop? You know, if we've given these corporations this power, the power of the dollar, where does it end? Will we see, I mean, because I joke all the time that you've got the two senators from Walmart there in Arkansas, because you can't possibly get elected in the state of Arkansas without kowtowing to the corporation. Why not just have Walmart run itself? That's an interesting thought process. And it makes you think about the money that we've spent on politics. It makes you wonder how we've allowed this to get out of hand. And, you know, I go back to the Powell memo back in 1971 when the Chamber of Commerce decided, you know what, the free enterprise system is under attack. We need to figure out, we need a plan. We need a game plan to fight back. So Lewis Powell, who was to be a Supreme Court justice a couple years later, wrote this piece on how to have a strategy, a game plan, on how to influence the body politic, how to influence the education, the judiciary, how to do this power brokering. And who was going to pay for it? And what they said is all the business community who have advertising budgets, what they need to do is give 10% of their advertising budgets to think tanks and to these lobbying organizations who will do their bidding. So Citizens United is the logical extension from this movement, something that even Powell himself never could have imagined, because I just don't think he ever thought it would ever get that far. And I wonder if he were alive today what he would think of his mastery, of the work that he had put forth and that the business community has done so well executing. Because really, honestly and truthfully, they bought both parties. And I go back, you know, pretty much to what my government teacher always said. You know, the rich are going to be for big business, and the Republicans are going to be for big business. The poor and the Democrats are going to be synonymous. Who you want to pay for? Because who are you closer to? And in this country, we all love to think we're one lottery ticket away. We're one lottery ticket away from rubbing elbows with Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. We're one idea away from being Bill Gates. And you know what? There are going to be one or two lottery winners who are going to be able to do that. You're going to either have the birth lottery or the education lottery, or, you know, you had a really great idea that took off. But for the vast majority, and I'm saying vast majority, it's about getting up every day, punching a clock, working your hardest, being dedicated to a company, helping them to succeed so that you can support your family, and then having them, as the years go by, dump you into the streets, which is what's been going on. And they want unlimited control. And that, my friends, is what this election cycle is about. We can talk about little nuance. We can talk about small things, but at the end of it, it's an ideology of unrestrained corporations doing in their own interest what they deem necessary. Not for the betterment of society, not for the benefit of the working class or for the community. Nothing about that. What's good for them. We used to think that what was good for GM, what was good for America, because they produced high-paying local jobs. And those good-paying jobs produced other jobs. When you had high-priced, high-paid factory workers who had disposable income, they could go to, you know, Sally's Flower Shop, and they could go to the Two Cups Coffee Shop, and they could go to the nice restaurant and see a play, and they had disposable income, and that created other jobs. We don't have that. Disposable income, almost a thing of the past. Why? Because as David K. Johnston put forth, our wealth has been redistributed. The economic pie has been shifted. The guy who's cutting the pieces is cutting people like you and me smaller and smaller pieces. All in favor of corporations. And look, I've said 1,000 times, I'm not anti-business. I am anti-laissez-faire, unfettered, monopolistic corporations. I'm anti-transnational corporation. I want people to start small businesses locally. And you know what's interesting to me? Our definition of what a small business is. The definition of a small business in this country is really screwed up. Bechtel is considered a small business. When I think of a small business, I think of a guy who has an idea. You know what? I'm going to hire a couple of people. I'm going to cut grass, or I'm going to do home remodeling. I'm going to maybe engineer a small product. Maybe I'm going to start a small machine shop that will hopefully grow into something bigger. Those are the people that I think are small businesses. You know, I had heard a number that a small business is anything with fewer than 500 employees. I'm sorry, I don't think a business with 499 employees is a small business. When I think small business, I think, you know, 10, 12, 15 people, 20 people, and maybe growing a little bit. That's what I think of as small business. And I think those are the people you need to encourage. Because those are the people who grow from 15 to 20 to 30 to 50 to 100, and they grow larger. And the larger that they grow, the more stable they become. And the more taxes they should be able to, expected to contribute. Why? Because they use more of our infrastructure. They use more of the commons. They use more of our roads and our bridges and our court systems. You know, I'm never going to file a patent with a patent court. Chances are I'm never going to need a contract court, but my tax dollars pay for them so that industry has them. So there's a lot of things that we need to think about in this country. And while it may be funny to poke light at, you know, Murray Hill Incorporated running for Congress and their designated human, the sad reality about it is this Citizens United case has turned our political process upside down because of the sheer amount of money that has perverted this system. And we should all be afraid. We should all be afraid when you know, I look at West Virginia, for instance. Neither candidate to me is acceptable. You look at Nevada. I don't think either candidate is acceptable. You look at Alaska. I don't think any of the three are acceptable. And I look at Delaware. What that woman is doing on the ballot, I have no idea. But you know what? That's what's great about our country. She made it to the ballot. Now the people of Delaware are going to have to decide, is she the kind of person that we want representing us? And that's only a question for the folks in the state of Delaware. Personally, I think it'd be hysterical. I'd love to see Christine O'Donnell in the Senate. I think it would be an absolute riot. It wouldn't be very good for democracy. It wouldn't be very good for the country. But sitting in this chair, like George W. Bush made me a comedian. The guy was a walking punchline. I think she would be too. So remember, on Tuesday, it is your duty. It is your right. It is your responsibility to get out there and cast your ballot. I don't care who you cast it for. Well, I do, but regardless, every person in this country should vote. And we should not have a governor or a senator who won by having 11% of the population vote for him. I'm sorry, it just rings of a third world nation. And we're better than that. We absolutely are better than that. And I hope you will. November 2nd, Tuesday. You got 13 hours. Find 15 minutes to get in there and pull the lever. It's been a great week. This is the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show. Together, we can make America better. Email rick@thericksmithshow.com or interact with us anytime at thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
It's coming like the tide of flood beneath the lunar sway. Imperial, mysterious, and amorous ray. Democracy is coming to the USA.
The Rick Smith Show on Country Gold Radio, WIOO Carlisle, and WEEO Shippensburg.